Welcome back to another episode, and welcome back to those of you that are tuning in via YouTube and listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you are listening. An enjoyable start to the season, Callum.
It's not gone bad, has it? Not gone bad. Absolutely smash tackling in the first leg, and then starting off the league campaign against Dundee United, against Charlie Mulgrew, and beating them 2-0, they didn't even have a sniff, so can't complain at all.
Yeah, exactly. Charlie had to resort to dirty tactics on Funzo Ojo just to make, and that was probably his biggest impact, was that collision in the game yesterday. And probably Dundee United themselves' biggest impact on the game because, let's be honest, they were dreadful.
Long may it continue as well. Well, not the kicking of Funzo Ojo, though. My pal next to me uttered the words, "If he did that on the street, he'd be done for assault." So it was classic, really, wasn't it?
Yes, those classic football shouts are back.
We've missed them. But yeah, and it was good to be back in, well, not even back in the red shed, just in the red shed. I wasn't in it for the hacking game. What an atmosphere. Loving it. Absolutely loving it. And there's some new songs, Glenn, that you were fairly enjoying on Twitter over the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Give it to Christian Ramirez. Pass him the ball and watch him score all the goals. And I even noticed the official SPFL Twitter page picked up that song when they were promoting the goal after Christian Ramirez quoted the fans in Scotia singing it after the game.
That is brilliant. It was in my head like all of today, and I wasn't even there. So there you go. Very much enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm sure most of you will have hated that little sing song that I gave you, but there's more to come, don't worry. But just on the red shed itself, Callum, your season ticket is actually in the south stand. Mm-hmm. What did you make of the red shed in terms of atmosphere? Obviously, you know, still not a full red shed. I think there's less than 400 season tickets available there. Speaking to a few people after the game, they're speaking of potentially moving their season tickets in there because even though was partial crowds, it still generated a decent atmosphere. Quiet in parts, but overall good.
As to be expected, probably on a Sunday, to be fair. But for obvious reasons. But no, really enjoyed it. My season ticket's next to fence. Sort of was thinking about getting red shed, but I thought, I don't know how it's going to go. And I was like, oh, even if red shed's good, then you still need like a decent fence because that's, you know, that's the way it is. So you still need that. But no, very much impressed. I think when there is chances to go in there, probably will. And maybe going ahead after the season, maybe we'll try and get a season to get in there. But I say it was obviously at times there was little lulls, but that's always going to be the case. It's great atmosphere. It's good seeing. It feels like properly being back at the football, and it kind of feels like a little away day at home, which is great.
Yeah, because it's been known that Pittodrie has been severely lacking in atmosphere for a long time, it's nice to have that kind of feeling a bit more constant throughout the home games. It's just good to look forward to going back to Pittodrie. Mm-hmm. And I did like when Christian Ramirez scored, a few folk around me noting that they had him as captain on fantasy football. Obviously, we've got our fantasy football league, Callum. It was great to have so many of you joining in the league. Sam Downey, you're currently leading that, but just stay tuned. We've got a little exclusive towards the end of the show. Managed to negotiate a prize for the winner of the league. So Sam, there's a bit of motivation for you. So stay tuned in to find out more. Callum, on the game itself, we saw the team news. Ryan Hedges wasn't in the squad. No real news on why that was. I seen folk speaking yesterday. There was rumours of Blackburn being linked to him.
Interesting. I hope that's not the case, in all honesty, but it wouldn't surprise me, I suppose, given how he played last season. It would be unfortunate. It would be a shame to lose him, especially after we've looked sort of really good starting this season. Unfortunately, not seeing him at his best yet. So it would be nice if he stayed and we got him firing, obviously, and then we'll definitely win the league. So hopefully he doesn't go down to south. Hopefully he doesn't go down south. But if he does, then if we can get a good fee and then be able to use that money perhaps elsewhere, I mean, that's the only silver lining, really. But hopefully it doesn't go.
Yeah, so I mean, it's obviously just rumours at this point. And I suppose another player not in the matchday squad either was Matty Kennedy. We spoke in the Premiership preview episode that it was kind of a bit of a forgotten man so far. And it seems more so now him being out in the cold. But I don't know if it's maybe due to the squad sizes, given now for the Premiership it's only going to be 3 subs this season instead of 5.
Yeah, possibly. You could be right there. It is weird. I generally did forget that he was about. I don't know. I think he can still, he's still good enough to be a role player here, not to start, especially given the way we're playing, how we're setting up. But I suppose if he did go elsewhere, maybe it wouldn't be a great loss. But
you know. Maybe use him as a as bait, so to speak, in part in terms of swap deals, maybe with somebody, who knows. We'll time will tell. Mm-hmm. You know, it's maybe a bit of worry about Hedges not being in the squad, but Johnny Hayes came into his position, so to speak, in the team in terms of just kind of getting free reign of the midfield to roam about, allowing Jack McKenzie to start for the first time this season. How do you think Hayes got on in that role? Because I thought he struggled up until he scored.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't know. It was quite welcoming seeing Johnny Hayes a bit further forward rather than at left back.
I think it's something we've been calling for, given his performances so far, maybe this season.
I think so. I think he probably did better there than he did at left back, certainly at home against Haken. Yeah, it was interesting, and then obviously showed a great turn of pace for the goal too, which is encouraging. Although I don't know how Benji Seagrass didn't make it to that ball.
Well, I actually thought at the game, I did watch the highlights back. I thought he was miles offside when the ball was played through. But on the, I suppose that's the kind of difference of being in the Mirkland compared to the South. You're kind of facing the action instead of a side on view. And I think it's Chambers maybe is just playing him on, or it's maybe tighter than what it looked like at the game.
Yeah.
I don't know how Seagrass is very slow to react. I don't know if, again, it's maybe he's just expecting the flag, but you know, play it the whistle, mate. But
serves him right, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, Chambers' valiant effort to try and hook the ball clear off the line. I don't actually know. Do you think the ball was over the line before he got there?
I hope so. At a time, I honestly probably thought maybe it wasn't, not the whole ball of the line. But regardless, we'll take it. And I hope for Johnny Hayes' case it's not.
Well, thankfully, you know, he hoofed it in the side netting just to make sure that it was definitely a goal.
Finished
anyway.
It off for us, yeah.
Yeah, and how good was the celebrations in the stands after that ball hit?
Absolutely brilliant. And it was weird singing Johnny Hayes' name as well. It's been a while since that's been the case, but enjoyable nonetheless. But no, jubilant scenes despite probably some fragile individuals in Red Shed, including myself. But no, it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And thankfully, that wasn't the end of it either.
It wasn't, but that Hayes goal was just reward for what was really, you know, a large period of dominance from Aberdeen in particular, albeit the only shot on target had come after 27 minutes despite that level of dominance. But it was really enjoyable seeing Aberdeen look so comfortable, because United didn't offer anything, but we were, you know, doing our best to create chances, using the ball very well. And in fairness, in that first half hour, the only time United looked threatening was when we were giving the ball away.
Basically, yeah. Definitely, would I agree. I don't know what their manager was talking about, saying they had a good first half. He seems clueless, maybe a shite Stephen Glass, basically. That's what I'm thinking. I'm leaning towards that. But I was very impressed with the way we controlled it, where we moved the ball about. Dundee United didn't press me in any way, shape or form. The one thing that impressed me was Peter Pollitt's reaction to being called a fat Peter Pollitt, which I did feel quite bad about, but it was funny. So
I was to say, at least he took it on the chin. But you know, a team full of Aberdeen rejects, is that maybe a bit harsh on Pollitt there? You know, five ex Aberdeen players in the team yesterday. But no, I totally agree on that point about Tam Courts. You know, maybe he was in one of the members in the crowd being in a fragile state, thinking that United edged that first half, because. Mm-hmm. The only chance of note that I remember United having was when Harkes should have done a lot better with the ball that was splashed across the face of goal. Mm-hmm. He does get his head onto it. There's probably a poor connection, but you know, if he does what Christian Ramirez does in the second half, it's 1-1 going in at half time, and it'd have been absolutely no reward for a United team that just look toothless up top, because Shankland, I thought, was a great price to score any time in the game. It was just over 3-1 any time, but he was anonymous.
He was anonymous, but I think that also it's probably a big problem, the fact that he got a severe lack of service, I suppose, as well. But I was very thankful to see, well, grateful to see him go off for 20 minutes to go. It was like, well, maybe that's the game done, really, isn't it? Because they put Peter Pollitt through the middle for the last 20, which seemed ludicrous.
Yeah, exactly. That's inexperience maybe from the manager there. But it, like I said, in the first half, when United did threaten, probably in inverted commas, we should say, it was down to some dodgy moments. Constein responsible for a couple of them with some dodgy back passes or dodgy passes not looking. And I just felt that at times we were maybe a bit sloppy in possession. And, you know, it was this kind of discussion between those of us at the game that, and it was, I think, a point you and Robbie both raised again in that preview episode, that once we come up against a bit higher quality teams, you know, thinking ahead to Thursday and maybe further on in Europe if things go right, these are the sort of things we can't continue to do because we won't get away with it, especially, you know, even looking in the Premiership against likes of Hibs, Rangers, Celtic. Well, maybe not after watching them against Hearts, but we can't continue like that. We've got to cut out these mistakes.
100% agree. Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. Against a better team, you probably do get punished. Another one was the one with Calvin Ramsey, put it back over the bar. Good defending from him, but it was another chance for them to get in, essentially. A little bit concerning, and another reason was maybe wanting your man Gallagher in there, which I was actually a bit surprised he didn't start, to be honest. But I don't know. I don't know if he will come in, but it's a bit concerning when we're about to play a team where and their main striker's goal scoring record is quite frightening for them. So we can't afford to give them that many chances, I don't think.
No, we can't. But I suppose I should have maybe like had a confetti popper or something like that to celebrate the fact that we did still manage to go the 90 minutes without conceding a goal for the first time in Stephen Glass in a competitive fixture. So I think that for him, the defence, Joe Lewis, it's going to be great confidence going into Thursday night as well, but also hopefully carrying that momentum into the weekend's game away to Livingston. But when your team keeps a clean sheet, it then maybe makes it harder for a Declan Gallagher to come into the team.
Yeah, didn't even think that. Very true, very true. But it's hopefully something we can build off and hopefully give a bit of confidence. And maybe, you know, Gallagher might have to, you know, do even better, perform even better in training for that competition for places, which seems weird when you've basically got him and Constein's actual recognised centre-half. But mentioned again to Ross McCrory, he's slotted in well there. He looks like you could ask him to play any role on the park and he would do absolutely brilliant there. So can't complain about that, I suppose.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, those of you that have got Red TV subscriptions and maybe watch a lot of the content on there will have listened to the Ross McCrory interview before the away leg in Sweden last week, where he actually commented on playing centre-half. And he said, you know, that was his position coming through the academy and the ranks at Rangers. And it wasn't until he was kind of getting into the in and around the first team he was asked and developed into a centre mid. So he's more than comfortable playing there and maybe doesn't look at it all the time. But that obviously is maybe a preferred or comfortable position for him, which is encouraging for us, I suppose, having that option because we know we are short in that area. But I think we would all agree as fans, we would still like to see another centre half there because we know that's an area of concern. Gallagher didn't even get on yesterday, so he's still lacking minutes.
Very much concerned, and obviously mentioned, although McCrory doesn't always make me look like it, that he's comfortable there, it's probably just the fact he's not played there that much at all very recently.
True.
But I suppose it's a good thing that he is so comfortable there, and it's an option because we do have like 900 centre mids still, absolutely. And Sol McGeer getting involved as well.
We did, yeah.
And special mention to Funso Ojo as well. What a man he is. Flying down that right hand wing at times. Beautiful.
Yeah, I know. Who knew he could be a right winger and a left winger? But it just shows, I think, you know, I was listening to Stephen Glass's interview on Red TV at full time this morning when he said he was asked a question saying, you know, you played Dundee United at home last season and you got beat 3-0. And I remember, you know, our reaction to that was we're quite frustrated at the manner of the performance. And he was asked, does it just show how far him as a manager and the team have come? And he says, I think it's more the players buying into the philosophy. I think, you know, it was actually a really good question from Rory Hamilton because it is it is a good sign. You know, we didn't even score against Dundee United last season. Mm-hmm. We managed to bag two already, so something's working.
Well, definitely. A certain Mr. Sorry to have to mention his name, but Jack McInnes piped up after they papped us in the cup last season. I can't imagine him being very loud after that. But that shows you, that compare that 3-0 game where he's just come in, it's not his squad really, he's not had much time to work with him. And now he's managed to instill that philosophy, the style of play, and it's a big improvement. So mm-hmm. it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, and we've also, you know, we've added into the coaching staff, Alan mm-hmm. Russell, you know, it's evident. Even a lot of our set pieces yesterday, we tried the same routine that paid off against Hacken mm-hmm. in the first leg when in the first half, it felt like a carbon copy when Calvin Ramsey swung it into the back post, Constein free again. Crazy, I just find it crazy that he manages to get into these spaces, and instead of, you know, going for goal, he headed it back across, and I think Jet was unlucky not to get there first, and United cleared the danger. Mm. It's just refreshing to have that danger, kind of the arsenal in our weaponry, you know, for these situations at set pieces. It's either Hayes or Ramsey, but I think Ramsey's definitely the better free kick taker.
I'd say so, but it's a very good point, Ray, considering how huge our team was at points last season. Think about Ash Taylor, Hoban, Constein, McCrory, Ferguson's not exactly small, Hornby at times, or Cosgrove before that, and how terrible we were from set pieces. Mm-hmm. Compared to now, you can really see the difference. And it's still early days, so very happy. It's weird again having not much to complain about, Glenn.
Yeah, it is. And I suppose, you know, the way the first half went, it was comfortable. And I don't know, like, if maybe you felt that we should have been more than 1-0 up at halftime, because for all that we created in terms of possession, because I think at one point we were over 75% possession in the first half, we didn't test Benjamin Seagrass too much overall. I think overall in the 90 minutes, really. I don't remember him having too many decent saves to make.
No, I can't really either. I mean, I can remember Jet dragging a shot wide, which he maybe should have done better with. She maybe should have hit the target. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, great point. I don't remember testing him, and yet he still managed to score twice this game. And then last season, think how many times he bailed them out, and we still didn't manage to get one past him.
Yeah, I think last season I think he was just like Superman with some of his performances. But when the game is kind of on a knife edge at 1-0 and the team you're playing at aren't really doing much, as Aberdeen fans, we kind of know that to fear the worst in those situations. Like, you fear it off, they're going to get one chance and equalise. And, you know, just what a feeling to just have someone like Calvin Ramsey in your team that can just create a moment of genius, send Mark Reynolds back to his house to unpack the rest of the boxes from move-in day on Friday, because what a piece of play from the 18-year-old, and a perfect delivery that a striker like Christian Ramirez will eat up all day long, and bullets us into a 2-0 lead.
It was absolutely genius from him. And if that was all he did the whole game, you'd be like, oh, what a game he had still. But he was brilliant all round defensively again. He looks like he's been playing for 10 years rather than, like, 6 months. He's been involved with the first team, whatever, something like that. If that, that's probably been generous. And he's finally 18, so he can probably enjoy the champagne if he got any.
Yeah, I was gonna say that he can finally have it.
Yeah, it must have been shit for him turning 18. You know, don't do that tomorrow. But yeah. I suppose he can't complain. But no,
I wonder if that was a tactical man of the match award. You know,
maybe
it's
that
a belated birthday
true.
Present.
Could be very true. But no, it's very encouraging, and obviously we'll bang on about him, and I think that's fair. But equally, Chad McKenzie on the other side, he said in the post match interview, he's working on his attacking side of the game. Obviously, he's very good defensively, but he does look confident on the ball and he's improving.
But no, Calum, I totally agree. It's brilliant having young fullbacks on either side that are probably playing above themselves in terms of their year and level of experience, what they're showing, because they're showing no fear. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that's what Stephen Glass is instilling into these players. And it's probably, I'm glad people are also acknowledging which you've done there, acknowledging the performance of Jack McKenzie yesterday, and it's not being overshadowed by the excellent performance Calvin Ramsey put in, especially when Hampden Roar podcast, Craig Fowler from View from the Terrace, both tweeting last night about how excited they are to see two young, exciting prospects for Scotland in the future, right back Nathan Patterson and Calvin Ramsey, when we've been blessed with left backs for so long. I mean, we're one league game into the season and already folk are touting him for Scotland. That's pretty crazy.
It's a bit mental, especially since he's just turned 18. But no, it's a very good point, actually. We seem to have a load of fantastic left-backs at one point and then no right-backs. Sorry, Stephen O'Donnell. but no, very, very encouraging. I've maybe said, you know, Calvin Ramsey's maybe got the potential to be better than Nathan Patterson. Any Rangers fans watching, I know you like commenting, so why not subscribe while you're here for that obsession.
Or if you're an Aberdeen fan and haven't subscribed, you can do
it. Very true. Not specific to Rangers fans. Definitely not specific to Rangers fans. But I heard you've maybe got a song for Calvin Ramsey as well. I don't know if I'm going to be asking this question.
I mean, it's not my song. The person listening will know who created it, but it was delightfully sung last night in the bar. Yeah, so to the tune of Whitney Houston's I Wanna Dance With Somebody, we've got, I wanna dance with Cal Ramsey. I wanna feel the heat with Cal Ramsey. Yeah, I wanna dance with Cal Ramsey. With Cal Ramsey the dandy.
Yeah, let me be abundantly clear. It is brilliant. It is brilliant. It's just so funny seeing a little fragile Glenn singing it himself. But I know for a fact it'll be taken on by everyone else.
For a fact, 11 a.m. At Shettleston on next Hampden trip, you will be bouncing about shouting that at the top of your lungs.
At 10:30 on the bus going past the Haven, probably.
Half ten, we'll definitely.
No, half nine. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. Long if it's at 10:30, that'd be a bit of a concern.
Yeah, I know. I'm just disappointed to hear the news that Johnny's left Central. Might be having to find a new driver for this season. So
that's a job.
Definitely be good to see if that picks up on the terraces. Probably sung better than myself if other people join in as well. But it's good to because. I mean, you'll probably know yourself being in the Red Shed that we pretty much ran out of songs very quickly and we just sing the same stuff over and over. So it's good to see folk expanding the repertoire of songs because God knows we need it.
Exactly, especially when it's to an absolute tune so you can hoit on a bus and it'll be brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. We all know the popular Hibs fan that tunes into the show and is a regular guest every time we come up against Hibs. Michael Monin was in discussion with him about Calvin Ramsey and his performance the weekend. And I said that he's going to make us more money than Josh Doig will make Hibs, which is a pretty bold statement considering Hibs will not sell Josh Doig for less than $5 million. Watford rumour to be ready to pay that for him. Do you want to back me up that we'll make more money from Calvin Ramsey?
We will make more money from Calvin Ramsey. It's guaranteed. Calvin Ramsey is maybe like the best football player I've ever seen in my life. Don't want to get too ahead of myself. I think it's fair. And why not when Calvin Ramsey is going to be flying in the Europa Conference League group stages as well? That'll only improve things. And the Scotland cap, obviously, getting ahead of Nathan Patterson. I just hope, you know, we get penalty sell-on clauses as well, because even after that $5 million or whatever we get, and then add-ons, you know? Michael's going to hate me.
Yeah, you have definitely been drinking continuous today, but it's not even just the exciting prospect on the right side, like you said, left-hand side as well. Jack McKenzie's putting in equally steady and solid performances. Both of them are going to start attracting interest as well as obviously we're seeing potentially Ryan Hedges attracting interest, Lewis Ferguson, we all know the background to him as well. It's kind of great to see players raising the profile of themselves in the club. Mm-hmm. We know that's kind of the philosophy that's going to be instilled where, you know, build these players up and then sell them on for millions, hopefully. Just hope that we can enjoy them for as long as possible.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there's never going to be a doubt that if teams come in with big multi-million pound offers for these players, they're going to go, and that's fine. They look better their career. As long as they do it in a nice way, unlike some. But they'll go better their career, and we'll benefit from the money. We'll be able to then invest that in other young products, and hopefully they'll do the exact same. So, you know, it's encouraging. It's very, very encouraging to have two fullbacks. What is this? What's going on here?
I just say it's also nice to have a month on the Aberdeen calendar where the players are actually still at the club, because July we didn't have any players. So
you've maybe gone early with that one for the man at the bottom there, which was Luke Ferguson for anyone listening at home.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
See, but I'd like to say he had another great performance, and it's good to see, I actually said at the time, he's playing like a man with his head down, which is fair play, given all the sort of speculation around him. Don't think his agent did any favours for him there. Less to say about that man, maybe the better. But it's just encouraging.
Neither, I don't think his dad's done him many favours as well, bumping his gums in the press. But I suppose you're right, it was a good performance, and what a ball it was through for Johnny Hayes. Perfectly weighted.
Exactly. It's very, very encouraging. I think he'll only get better the more he plays alongside Scott Brown, who, again, was also brilliant.
Yeah, and tell you, for Scott Brown, I'm fully on board with this lap of honour he does at full time.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? They started doing it, I think, when McInnes first came in, and then it sort of just like faded out. But I'm enjoying that. It's not even like, it's like not just going to like one stand or whatever. They'll give it to everyone. And obviously after the Haken game, he went and gave his shirt to a kid, and then that encouraged Jett and Ramirez to do as well. And that'll stick with guys like players like that. And obviously the fans appreciate it as well when they've, you know, spent their money getting in there, and they've probably lost their voice at some stage as well. And it's nice to see them getting it back, giving it back. And it shows that they do kind of get what it's all about as well, which is encouraging.
Yeah, and I think it just helps create that fan engagement with the team, with the players, and we're seeing that. We've touched on many times about Jet's Snapchat stories, Jet's Twitter posts, Christian Ramirez. We know how much he loves the club. He seems to post as soon as he gets back to the dressing room. You know, even quoting that video from the pub last night with the fans singing the song, there's such a feel-good factor from the dressing room to the stands, and just long may that continue, because you know, see people, you know, speak about that siege mentality. When we've got that behind us, hopefully we can create a good bit of momentum and do something special this season. I know we're one game into the league campaign, and we're talking about that already. I think I've been drinking what you've been having, but you know, we're going to be speaking to Mark Bull from Iceland Football UK later on in the episode as well, ahead of Thursday's night game. But you know, seeing the draw for the playoff round, Limassol or Karabag away, it's a favourable draw if we can get through this hurdle. You know, fans are rightly beginning to get confident, and well, it doesn't take you much to get confident anyway.
Oh no, anytime one person does something brilliant, I'm just we'll have that.
Well, in saying that, it didn't take many fans to get confident yesterday. The chance of we're going to win the league were ringing out at 2-0.
I was a little bit responsible for that at times as well.
And of course you were.
Actually, the first time I did it, no one else was having it. Absolutely no one. So it went down like a lead balloon. But what's good, it's just good to see people, you know, having a good time and actually believing in what the club's trying to do for once. And as you say, building that rapport with the players as well, it can only be a good thing. Because if they get it, they buy into it, then obviously we're going to buy into them.
Yeah, I still think though, you know, Christian Ramirez, obviously we spoke about, good for him getting his goal in Europe. He's now got his first league goal under his belt. I'd like to see Jet get his first competitive goal for the club, because we've talked on it, and I think it's going to be talked on for a while. It's still an area of concern for me, because once Ramirez came off, I actually was surprised it was him that came off, because I thought Jet was looking a bit tired. He was putting an excellent shift. You know, a lot of the goal kicks were aimed at him to chest down, flick on, and he does a really good job of holding the ball up and bringing players in and around and with that link-up play that he provides. But for the shift he put in, I felt he tired towards the end. And again, once Ramirez went off, we just didn't look like we had much, but it was excellent game management from the team at 2-0. And like you said, even Dundee United had to resort to putting Peter Pollitt up top.
Yeah, not really a good sign, is it? But no, I do agree. I think, obviously, Ramirez had the better game. I think maybe what's in Glass's mind is perhaps that Ramirez obviously looked a little bit leggy in the last game after Jet went off, so perhaps giving him a bit of rest after Jet obviously did get that after a head knock.
Yeah, good point.
That was my only thinking behind it, but I still would like to reiterate the point that there is probably a need for another striker to come in. Because if something happens to one of them and then sort of Conor McLennan or Niall McGinn's got to fill in up there, it's not going to be the same, is it?
Yeah, there was, when Conor McLennan came on yesterday, a few groans when, you know, he was fresh on the pitch and folk were running past him and, well, once again, his touch was letting him down. So it is frustrating because obviously his fans were, I think when you see the standard being set by those starting the games, you want to see those standards maintained by your substitutes. Mm-hmm. So when those standards start slipping, it becomes more obvious to those watching. I think Connor's in kind of one of those positions where if other players start coming in, you look at Teddy Jenks, we know we've not seen much of him. You've got the experience in Niall McGinn. He could potentially find himself down the pecking order. Matty Kennedy, Ryan Hedges are all going to, well, Ryan Hedges would be ahead of him. Mm-hmm. When he's in the squad. Matty Kennedy hasn't featured for Aberdeen this season, but again, a player that might be desperate to grab his chance when given. So, you know, we've got to see these players that are coming on make that same impact to give Stephen Glass that question about who starts.
I 100% agree, but on the more positive note, on sort of relative to the same point, it's good to see Dil McGee getting involved and like what a to have him on your bench and then you're comfortable in the game, but it'll take him on to help control things. I mean, that you're in a good position when that's the case. And even sort of at times, it wouldn't surprise me he came on and replaced Brown, gave Brown a little bit of a rest.
Well, I actually thought that's who he was coming on for. When I saw him getting ready, I thought, oh, we're resting Scott Brown. He knows 2-0 up. But even yesterday in, you know, games gone by from last season, the way we saw that game out, we didn't see it out at 1-0. We got the second goal and then saw it out. We made the game relatively comfortable because, to be fair, a lot of us, even at 2-0, as Aberdeen fans, still probably didn't feel comfortable until the 90th minute. That's just the way it is. But the substitutions were done at the right time, and it was, you know, like you said, bringing on, okay, we took off Ramirez for and brought on McGeoch, but it was just the way we saw out the game. And there's that tactical nous, to use your word, and probably going to be the word of the show in recent weeks, but it just felt refreshing.
Yeah, 100%. It is encouraging to not get a 1-0 lead after half an hour or whatever and then just sit on your 18-yard box and try and defend it forever. And I think that is the way Glass promised they'd probably play. Again, I know we said it previously, but it is encouraging to see them come out and saying these things and actually delivering on them. Obviously, it's early days, but so far, that's all we've got to go off. So there's obviously going to be a reason to be positive.
Yeah, reasons to be positive, especially as we now head to Iceland on Thursday night, a great country that I'm gutted that we can't go to. Well, I think though there will probably be a few of you that will be flying over to Reykjavik to see the game. But we're delighted to be joined by Mark Bull from Iceland Football UK, who will talk us through the game on Thursday and give us an excellent insight into the opposition. But Callum, just a final word from you before we do speak to Mark. It's great to be going into that game with a winning momentum, but the confidence from the clean sheet.
Yeah, 100%. And hopefully we can build off that. Obviously, the fact's the first one I've had this domestically. It'd be great if we went over there as he kept clean sheet and, you know, maybe even nick to win. That would be very, very encouraging.
So, Mark, thanks very much for joining myself on Red Tinted Glasses. Pleasure to have you on the show.
No problem. Good to be on the show and speak to you.
Yeah, it's probably a popular man, given the knowledge you have on Icelandic football.
Yes, it's been quite a busy week. I've had quite a few people from Iceland actually getting in touch with me as well, wanting to get the lowdown in Aberdeen. So it's been... And the same here from Scotland, so it's been a bit hectic so far, and I'm trying to get tickets sorted out for the game at Pittodrie as well, because it's obviously going to be a sellout. I don't know how many fans are going to be there. I'd say maybe 5,000-6,000, maybe slightly more. I don't know what the script is going to be for it yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully we get some good news with the restrictions being lifted, and it might actually be a full crowd for the home leg. So that might make you getting tickets a little bit easier. So as we said, Aberdeen take the trip over to Iceland, a beautiful country that you've spent a lot of time in. I've been lucky to spend a few days there, and without doubt my favourite European country I've visited. Calvin Ramsey saying it's a place that he's always wanted to go in his post-match interview after Sunday's victory. What was it that made you fall in love with Iceland and Icelandic football, Mark?
As I said, some other pods that I've been on, I've played against a couple of Icelandic teams in the mid-80s, and you know, this is the days before internet, and it's, you kind of wonder what countries, what their kind of football infrastructure is like, and you wonder what kind of stadia and what the players are like, what the football consists of, and it was a bit of an unknown country, even up to maybe the turn of the millennium. Nobody really knew what was going on over there, so it was just one of these countries that I went over in 92, visited the place and fell in love with the place. And I've just got to know more and more people through football and bringing clubs over to Scotland to play matches over here and organising tours and putting teams over to Iceland as well. So it's kept me quite busy the last few years, plus doing my writing, the books that I've done in magazines.
Yeah, there's quite a few books that you've done. We'll touch on them towards the end of the show, because it's been really fascinating kind of researching you and the work that you've done on Icelandic football, and obviously you won that prestigious award from the Icelandic FA as well.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to get that. I got a phone call, I think it was in February, and it was from the, well, I got an email first and asking for my number from the FA, and I was wondering, I says, have I done something right wrong with copywriting or something here? But I got it all up front beforehand, so I was like, oh, what have I done? What have I done? Have I used the wrong picture or wrong image? And it was, they'd told me that I'd won the award, so it was quite a proud moment to get that, even though it would have been better if I was over in Iceland picking it up, but obviously the COVID situation stopped that, and the AGM where it would have got picked up was cancelled. It had to be done online due to the amount of people that were allowed to be in a certain area each time.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a real shame. But you know, obviously a huge honour, like you say, for yourself picking up the award.
Yeah.
Icelandic football as a whole, exploded onto the scene in Euro 2016 when the nation qualified for the Euros, and obviously the famous result against England knocking them out. Just how much of a significant moment was that competition for Icelandic football as a whole, and like what sort of impact did that lead onto the club scene and the league itself?
First of all, for your first part of your question, it was absolutely, it's the biggest thing that's ever happened in Iceland. They still speak about it to this day. When I was over there last week, I've done an interview with the Icelandic National Supporters Club, and was asking them the same thing. What was your favourite moment? Hoping somebody's going to say qualifying for the World Cup or something, but I'll rush back to the England game. It was such a significant event. I think there was only something like 300 out of the whole country never watched again. The TV figures came back, and I think there was only 300 people or something. It was something very small like that. That never tuned in to watch the match against England that night. But going further on to your question, you would have thought that would have been a moment to kind of grasp, especially for the league sponsors. But the league's slightly went downhill since.
Okay.
But, I mean, it was also kind of on a level. I would say around about 2014, 2015, I think that was when the Icelandic league was at its strongest. It was a lot stronger than what it was just now. But obviously football's changing every 2 or 3 years now. Yeah. Simple rules that are changing the whole dynamics of a match, so it's, I would say, football is getting better, it is getting better. It's more pleasing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's more that could be done to improve the game. The infrastructure and everything's there, but it's just trying to get the players over. There's not enough money to kind of get big names on loan because they can't afford to pay transfer fees nice ones yet because they're still semi-pro clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So they've only got their budget to kind of run over a year, and then they've got a budget set aside for players who they can get on loan wages. So they're not at that stage of actually buying players. There'll be internal transfer fees for players, maybe £10,000-£15,000. That's the highest that they're going for, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they've still got a wee bit. It's such a small country.
Yeah.
And the clubs are only getting maybe 1,000 of support. That's still quite a lot of support for such a small area.
Mm-hmm.
In the Reykjavik area, I think there's 9 clubs or something in that area.
Okay.
That's just the kind of bigger clubs. And there's lots of smaller clubs as well. So there's a lot of money to get divvied out between sponsors and stuff. Mm-hmm. Everybody's chasing the same cash.
Okay. And obviously looking at the opposition that we face on Thursday, apologies if I pronounce them wrong to any Icelandic listeners or viewers. Is it Breidablik? Is that how you pronounce it?
Breidablik. They'll understand. Yeah, Breidablik.
Breidablik. So
I've just scored away in there. They're winning 2-0 now.
Oh, are they?
In the match just now, yeah.
Well, they're picking up form at the right time or wrong time if you're from an Aberdeen point of view. Looking at them when I was doing a bit of research for speaking to you tonight, you know, they've produced some good players over the years. Gylfi Sigurdsson, John Berg Gudmundsson. Obviously, it's 3 years since Aberdeen faced his Burnley team. And Alfred Finnbogason, who people know from Heerenveen or his time at Real Sociedad. And, you know, even followers of Scottish football might remember when they knocked out Motherwell in the 2010-11 season, winning 1-0 both home and away. So, you know, they do carry some pedigree. And, you know, this is actually the second time they've reached the third round of Europe. Last time they did that, they also beat Austrian opposition in Sturm Graz.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to be a club that's got a wee bit of European pedigree. I mean, this coming up, their game on Thursday against Aberdeen, that's only their 20th game in Europe.
Mm.
So it's not really a lot of games that they've actually played in Europe, if you know what I mean. But what they've done is they watch every game. They'll go through every single game and check their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had their under-19s over. They do a lot of video analysis at that club.
Okay.
So they check everything. So every time they're playing a game in Europe, they'll be going over everything that they've done wrong or done right. But they've got a good wee run so far.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, Aberdeen, they'll need to be careful over there because it's just a team that they can't write off. And I see on Twitter and everywhere today that everybody's looking ahead to the next round for the Limassol game or whoever it's going to be. Limassol, the other team, what's the other team's name again?
Karabag from Azerbaijan.
So everybody's looking at that game, but you've still got to get through this first. Mm-hmm. And that's where complacency comes in.
Absolutely. But, you know, I heard you speaking on the other podcast about them being a part-time team. But as you've just kind of touched on there with them kind of leaving no stone unturned then ahead of Thursday's game, that's definitely something Aberdeen shouldn't be taking for granted coming up against a part-time team.
No. It's a part-time. They're more semi-pro than part-time. They're more semi-pro. As I said, they'll have their 5 days training, a game day and a rest day.
Mm.
It's the same as what the clubs are doing over here. Okay, you're like say your Premier League teams, they might be in twice a day in training.
Yeah.
But a lot of the boys at Breidablik, they've all got jobs.
Mm.
I think there might only be one or two professionals that are actually playing in that team.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mickelson, I think he's on good wages. There's one or two guys that are getting... They don't have to work.
Yeah.
But the rest of the guys, they'll need to have a job and just take up a small wage from playing with the club.
Hmm. And watching some of their highlights, they certainly are not afraid to pass the ball about. Looking at the goal they scored over in Austria, and even the second goal in the return leg at home was kind of excellent passing move and build up play. So they look a very good technical team.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that the top four Icelandic clubs, top four or five Icelandic clubs, there's a bit of a drop. When you get down to it, it's quite similar to the Scottish Premier League. Look, you've got your top six here that are kind of reasonable, and you know they're going to be top six finishers. Then you've got the bottom six, so you know they're going to struggle, and there'll be one or two might be safe. It's the same in the Icelandic League as well. You've got your top four teams over there, and they do play pretty classy football. I've seen Valur last year, I watched them playing against German. The first half, honestly, the football was absolutely, it was a thrill to watch. And it was, honestly, it could have been AC Milan or something like that you were watching.
Yeah.
The football was that good. Second half, they turned their foot off the pedal and it wasn't so good. But it was just everybody, so much confidence went through the team. And you see that with Icelandic football, but it's the problems that the clubs have got over there is they get a bit of momentum. And then it goes off the boil. There's just something that they can't keep the level going for a whole season if they're playing well. I mean, Breidablik in the last two or three years have been in the title race. I think it was 2 years ago. They were right in the title race, and they sold three players, three first-team players in the August window. And they also had to do it because the clubs were offering them big money. So that kind of blew their chances of winning the league. And they had to take it in the chin. It was either you take the money or go for the league. And obviously, money's more important to keep the club moving. So that's the predicament a lot of these clubs get every year. Because obviously, it's a summer season. And if players are performing well, the teams in Europe will come and get them before the window closes.
Yeah, I know. So again, you know, Aberdeen are coming up against a team that are well into their season, and you said, you know, 2-0 currently tonight. Aberdeen, those started the season well and kept their first competitive clean sheet under Stephen Glass, but have been playing a very attacking brand of football. You know, both fullbacks pushing up and causing teams that we've played so far problems. Do you think that's something that we can exploit on Thursday night?
That's going to be a difficult one. It depends how Breidablik set their team up. I think I think they're going to set it up differently. What they've got. I'm just looking at their team just now, and there's only been two changes from the team that won against Austria. And it's just one guy's out; he's suspended, and it's only two changes that they've made. And basically, they're not really resting him because this game tonight will put them right in the title race again. Well, they're obviously going right into it now. But I don't know. I think they'll change their formation for the Aberdeen game. I'm really wondering what they're going to actually do. But I know they'll come out and they'll come out and attack Aberdeen. They're going to have to. I don't know if Aberdeen pushing forward is going to help them, because that will leave them exposed a bit at the back as well. And Breidablik, I've got the guys that will cause problems there. Gisley Ailson, he's been hot and cold this year, but when he turns it on, he's another great player. He was out at, I think it was Norway or Sweden, he was out at last year, and he's wanting to go abroad again this year. So, and he's got the quality, but he just needs to hit the confidence all the time. Just something you can see, sometimes he's low in confidence. I watched him the other week there, and he's a guy who can turn a few heads. Honestly, he's that good when he really is on his game. But it's just, he's hot and cold sometimes. So if he finds his form, it's going to be difficult for Aberdeen. So I've seen Aberdeen midfield now. It's kind of obviously changed a bit from last year. So it could be an interesting midfield battle to see what happens, because obviously Breidablik have got quite a few handy midfielders as well. So I think it could a midfield battle for a bit of dominance in the first half, and I think whoever comes out on top, I think that could swing the game. I honestly think if he could swing again, but Breedablick are a wee bit problems defensively. They can be a bit out of sorts when they're playing the ball out from the back, as you've seen with the.
I was going to say, as you saw from
Austria,
the goal that they conceded in the second leg was down to a bit of a defensive error. But even what you're saying there about leaving Aberdeen exposed, you know, we were just talking about that in the review of the game at the weekend. Aberdeen were quite sloppy in possession at times. Dundee United, you know, thankfully never capitalised on that. But by what you're saying is that if the confidence is flowing in this team, which it seems to be right now, they're more than capable of taking their chances when they come.
Oh yeah, definitely, absolutely, definitely. I mean, as I say, look, it's quite a strange one because I was actually speaking to some people up in Iceland the other week there, and we're speaking about when they've played Scottish clubs in Europe, and it's been quite close lately. And realistically, Scottish teams should be taking kind of reasonable care of Icelandic clubs. But the game is getting better over there, even though I'm saying it's been down a stage in the last 5 years. They're still got guys out there who are good players. But I think they would struggle to play in the Premier League, Scottish Premier League, because it's a much more physical game. So it'll be an interesting one, seeing the physicality of the Scottish game and the technical ability of the Icelandic teams, and seeing what comes out on top on it, to see who's going to get the better of each other. So it'll be a decent one to watch.
Yeah, I just hope if it becomes a physical battle, we don't pay the price for the amount of bookings that we picked up over in Sweden, because I'm not sure if it's two bookings that lead to a suspension. So if it becomes physical and we get another card happy referee, we might have a bit of problems for the second leg. But
yeah,
I heard you touch on the news in Iceland reacting to the victory over Austria Vienna and how big that was. What are the media viewing of the game on Thursday night?
There's not actually been that much about it. There's been very little. I think there's a general sense of excitement within Iceland. Our teams actually kind of went a wee bit further than normal. Usually they get put out in the first, second round or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they went a wee bit further this year, there is a kind of general feeling of excitement, and that's not just from Breedablick, that's from all the other clubs that are wishing them well as too.
Yeah.
They get a lot of support from all the other clubs and chairman, board members and supporters of other clubs, because they're wanting an Icelandic club to do well and obviously get their coefficient back because they'd lost a team this year. And I think that they need to get them, I think they need to win, and some a Faroese team or a Welsh team have to go out to try and get their place up again in 2 years' time. But there is a general feeling of excitement. I mean, they're going into the unknown now, and I wouldn't say there's anything to be scared of, and whoever gets through in the next round, I think it's winnable games, so everybody's got their eye on the prize here.
Yeah, definitely. And there's been a lot of talk about where the game's going to be played, whether it's going to be played at their home stadium or the Icelandic National Stadium. Just how much of an advantage would it be to them to be playing at their own stadium, or would there be any disadvantage if the game was moved?
I don't think it's going to be in the National Stadium. It's been confirmed that it's going to be in the National Stadium. But I don't think there'll be any advantage, to be quite honest. Obviously, they're playing on a plastic surface. The National Stadium's grass.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in the National Stadium 2 weeks ago, and the pitch was just absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think the surface is going to play too much of a big deal in it kind of stuff. Breedablick's surface is pretty good anyway.
Yeah.
But I think they were just wanting the fans enjoying the game being in their hometown. I think that was more of the issue. Like, they were wanting their fans there. But it's not a big problem to travel into Reykjavik. Like, most of them will probably have supporters' buses or coaches on.
Yeah.
And it's only 5-10 minutes away anyway to the National Stadium for most people.
Yeah, and I know there's probably going to be some fans from Aberdeen trying to make the journey to Reykjavik. But for those that watched when England travelled to Iceland during the COVID lockdown, there's plenty of vantage points outside of the ground if they can't get tickets to get a good view of the game.
Yeah, they can. They can watch the game no problem. There's just some trees behind the goals at the Throttar Reykjavik end of Throttar Stadium, right at the opposite end of the National Stadium, first division team. But if they stand there, they'll be able to see the game. But I'm sure they'll get in.
Yeah.
I don't know. There will be a limit on it. How many fans are allowed in, because the COVID situation's kind of spiked up in Iceland again.
Yeah,
no. And I was on the phone earlier to the goalkeeper of Breidablik, Antonari Einarsson. His mother and father have been going to all the away games in Europe, and they're desperate to go over to Pittodrie, so they're trying to find out what way they can go, because they'll have to quarantine for 10 days going back.
Oh, will they? Oh.
Yeah.
I thought that was, well, I don't know, it might have changed, because I was looking at trying to head over to Iceland in the winter again. And I know that they were lifting the quarantine for double vaccinated folk from the UK, but obviously if there's been a spike, things might change. But yeah,
it's all changed. It all changed just the week I came back.
So you timed it well.
I couldn't have timed it any better. I think you've got to show that you've got a you've been vaccinated within 72 hours before you enter the country now. You've got to get a test over there, and you need to get a test back in the UK as well.
So it's an ever-changing situation.
Looking
ahead to the game itself on Thursday, obviously Aberdeen carry plenty of attacking threats. But for those that are familiar with Scottish football, you've already mentioned him, Thomas Mickelson. He spent time at Ross County and Dundee United. For those that maybe have done a quick Wikipedia of Breidablik and their players, will notice just how excellent his scoring record's been since joining the Icelandic team. What danger does he provide to Aberdeen? But also, who else are the danger men that we've got to be wary of as fans?
Well, there's a few in there, I can say that. Gisley Eilson, who I've mentioned before, him and Hoskald are in midfield. Hoskald and Logson, midfield. They're the guys that can break open Aberdeen. That's the kind of guys that you need to look at. Victor Orn Margerson and David Orn Atlason, they've been guys that have been, they can chip in with goals as well. But I think they're resting Thomas again tonight. They're wanting him fully fit. And I think he's not 100% yet. They'll probably put him on later on, maybe give him 10-15 minutes,
just to give him
a wee bit of game time. I just don't think he's 100% fit yet, so it'll be a make or break to see if they're going to play him up front on Thursday. But he's powerful in the air, and he's been setting up a lot of goals as well. He's a lot of layoffs, and he's winning a lot of headers and laying it off to the guys, and they're putting the ball in the net. Christian Steindorsen as well is another big name player. But as I say, Horsgaard's the guy. He's the guy who can hit free kicks as well. I seen him against KR Reykjavik the other week there, and he pinged a free kick in about 25 yards into the top corner, just left the goalkeeper with no chance. He is definitely a player.
Yeah, it's a joke. And aware from set.
I would think there'd be clubs watching him right now, because I think he has had such a good season. I think he could be away to Europe again.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye out for him. But, you know, they're a team that are filled with under-21 internationals, or they've had experience on the international stage. So, yeah, there really is, as you said, you know, people maybe being a bit optimistic looking ahead. We really have to have our wits about us ahead of this game. But do you think... from a Breidablik perspective, it's more important for them getting a positive result at home and the game being in Iceland first.
I think they'll need to get something at home. They'll definitely need to get a goal or two at home, and they'll need something to come to Pittodrie with and try and protect.
I think if they get
a defeat on Thursday, I think that's a tie over. I think I really can't see Breidablik coming to Pittodrie and causing a huge upset. I think what they could do is that if they get a 1-0 victory in Iceland, they'll come and protect it and just hit Aberdeen in the counter attack. And this is where it falls in Breidablik's favour, if you know what I mean. Because it's Aberdeen that are having to do all the attacking and having to be cautious at the back and the defensive areas. So it could swing, but Aberdeen could go out and win 2-3 on Thursday.
Yeah.
If they get everything correct and obviously they'll have a game plan set up. They'll have all these guys watched as well. Mm-hmm. I know David Winnie's over there just now, and I think he was going to the game tonight. I think he'll be helping Aberdeen with some stuff as well. Mm-hmm. So he'll be probably your scout that's in the mist just now over at the game.
But yeah, as you said, you know, they'll leave no stone unturned, but I'm sure Stephen Glass and the rest of the coaching staff will be doing just as a good a job in making sure that we're well prepared for the challenge that lies ahead. But do you think Breidelbeck will also be encouraged, as like you've touched on, Aberdeen fans may be encouraged by the draw that was done today with the opportunity to progress?
Well, I think it suits Aberdeen more, the draw came out today. I don't think Breidelbeck be paying too much attention to it. Mm. I think because they see this as like their Icelandic Cup final against Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. And it's a big team that they're playing against. Obviously, Aberdeen got a bit of European pedigree about them, lifted the cup. And I mean, it's a huge game for Breidelbeck. I mean, if they could get this, they'd be in dreamland if they could get through this. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to put it. It's not as if they're quietly confident. They've got to be confident. They're players. They've got to show they're kind of confident. But I think it's a game for Aberdeen to lose. Mm. I think so, over the two legs. And I mean, Aberdeen will kick themselves. Of course they will, because they couldn't have got a better draw the way things are set up for their next two opponents, potential opponents. Mm-hmm. They've played teams in the past, and it's, I mean, what we've had in the last few years, Sporting Lisbon, Atletico Madrid.
Yeah,
that's the teams you're kind of running into.
Even Burnley has a Premiership experience. Yeah. So, no, it's certainly panned out nicely. Okay, we've been denied some pretty dreamy trips from an away fan point of view and visiting countries that wouldn't often get to as football fans. You know, certainly I think for those that haven't visited Iceland, it would be high up on bucket lists for many people. But I just hope that, you know, it is an entertaining game. And obviously from an Aberdeen point of view, we get the right result over two legs. But, you know, we saw over in Sweden that, I mean, okay, you could say that it's a different game given the result in the first leg. We know that we could be in for a bit of a battle. And I think from what you've given us an insight into, it's not going to be as easy as probably fans sitting at home think it might be.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I've never seen any fans that have won a European game for Endy. It's the players that have got to do it in the pitch. It's no matter if there's 40 or 50,000 fans in the stadium. Yeah. There's no fans that have ever won a game for Endy, even though they say it's the 12th man and all the rest of it. It's got to be done on the pitch, and it's got to be the tactics who've got to be right. No. The players have all got to be in the right frame of mind. Oh. I mean, the Breidelbeck, they've got the best academy in Iceland. There's eight guys in their starting lineup tonight, mm-hmm. that have came through their academy. That just shows you the quality that they've got in depth, mm-hmm. for even such a small club. Yeah. But Aberdeen, they should, if they do, if they've done their homework on them, they should be able to kind of know the positions where they can knock them off and make more space. Mm-hmm. They'll obviously watch the Aberdeen coaches will probably have watched quite a few of their games and had a look at how to get round teams, how to get over it if you're going over the top of the marking round. That's one thing I've never seen this year, is any teams putting long balls over the Breidelbeck team.
Okay.
And that could be an option as well. It's just something I've never seen.
Yeah.
Because one thing I noticed in the 2016 World Cup, European Championships, was every team at Iceland played, everybody tried to play through them or round them. Mm. And I was actually at the quarter final when they played France. France played over the top of them and destroyed them. I mean, everybody tried to play through them or go around them. And France, three of their goals all came from just balls over the top of the defence. Mm. And that was Deschamps done his homework well. Oh, wow. And that's the things that Aberdeen will have to look at as well.
Well, if Aberdeen haven't done their homework, so maybe someone can pass this information on to the club. It's a good insight there from you, Mark. And it's, you know, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you this evening. You know, obviously you're offshore currently, so appreciate you giving up some of your time tonight.
No problem.
To speak to us on Red Tinted Glasses and give a really fascinating insight not only into Icelandic football, but our opposition ahead of Thursday night. And I'm really looking forward to the two games. I think, you know, from hearing what you've had to say, it's maybe going to be a bit closer, certainly on Thursday, than maybe many of us expect.
Yeah, I would think so. I think it'll be a tight game, but I say that it could be 4 or 5-0. You just don't know. But I think you can never overestimate teams in Europe, especially if they're knocking out the teams that kind of like Austria Vienna. There's a few teams that went out in the early stages in the last round there, and you've got to give teams respect now. It's not like the olden days where you just go out and annihilate a team 4 or 5-0 each leg, have a letter or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
These smaller nations have all progressed to some kind of capability, so it's not as easy as what it used to be, but it'll be interesting to see what results are coming on. So I'm looking forward to this game anyway, and I'll be at Pittodrie. I'll get a ticket probably from the Republic team. I'll probably be their only fan or the match.
Yeah,
but I'm looking forward to it anyway.
I'm sure you'll get sorted one way or another with a ticket game at Pittodrie, and I hope you enjoy it if you do get to it. Mark, as I said, it's been great to have you on the show. For those that are tuning in, of course, they can follow you on Twitter. It's Icelandic Football UK. Mark's handle is @ Mark with a C, M-A-R-C, Bowl, B-O-A-L, all one word. And Mark, what about your work as an author on the books that you've done on Icelandic football? Where best are those tuning in able to look into buying those sort of books for them?
The books are available at Stanchion Books. You'll see that it's on Twitter as well. Stanchion Books are selling them. And if they contact me via private message, I can also sell books through myself through my page, and I've got a PayPal me, and I can, if they send me a private message, I'll tell them the price and everything. They can get a hold of me on there.
No, well, perfect. So you know where to go if you want to get researched up on all things Icelandic football. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining me on Red Tinted Glass tonight.
Great speaking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. That was the conversation there with Mark Bull. I hope you all enjoyed a fascinating insight into Icelandic football and the opposition ahead of Thursday's night's game. Callum?
Yeah, very, very useful. Always good to get insight from, well, anyone, essentially, even if it's Michael coming on for Hibs or David Priest, so and anyone in between. Very, very good to get an insight and get a bit more knowledge of the Icelandic game going into the game on Thursday.
No, definitely. And it's something we're looking to do more of this season, is get opposition fans involved, because it enhances our show, I feel, but also enhances you as listeners and viewers, hearing a respectable opinion on the opposition that we're facing, because not just the nonsense that me and Callum speak times out of 10, or 10 out of 10 in your case, Callum.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. Thanks, I appreciate that, Glenn. Thanks. Much appreciated.
No problem. We should also say a big thanks to Matthew Wood Design, who you can follow at Matthew J.I. Wood on Twitter. He has kindly donated a prize for our fantasy league. You know, we said tune in for that exciting news. So Sam Downey, you have an 11-point lead currently in the Red Tinted Glasses Fantasy League. And the prize, for those of you watching on YouTube, we'll see the Pittodrie print. It comes in A2 or A3. And Matthew has kindly agreed to donate the Pittodrie print as the prize to whoever wins our fantasy league. And Callum, it's great to have somebody coming along to offer up that as a prize.
100%. It's a good incentive for everyone that is involved. Unfortunately, it is too late now to get involved if you haven't already. But it's not too late to get involved. Everything else that's going on the channel, if you are watching on YouTube, don't forget to like the video, leave a comment with your thoughts, even if you think we're speaking total rubbish. And don't forget to subscribe. Let us know, please do. It's usually, it's good to know when, you know, I'm speaking rubbish. But and also subscribe, with notifications on, so you don't miss out on more nonsense in future. Or follow us wherever you're listening to. Glenn, sorry, what are you going to say?
I was just saying, and also, if you're unfortunate not to win, the Fantasy League, make sure you do check out the Twitter page. As we said, it's at Matthew J.I. Wood on Twitter. There is a link there to his website where you can buy the Pataudry print. There is another Aberdeen print. He did tag us in that on Twitter, which you can follow us at RTG underscore podcast. We did quote that tweet today on our Twitter page. So if you just have a wee scroll back, you'll see the two designs that are available and the link where you can buy them if you're impatient and don't want to wait till May.
100%. So thank you very much, Matthew, for that. Thank you, Mark, for his contribution. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you to Skylights as well for letting us use their song YRA as the intro and outro music.